Hello and welcome to the Board Game Triangle. Come and get lost in the Bermuda of board gaming with this terrific triangular trio.
Whoa, did you just come up with that?
No, that is from our ad read that Ken recently placed on the Greatest Generation podcast and also from our show notes.
Without permission notice to my podcast co-hosts, I believe they found out about it when someone joined the Discord. Was like, hey, I found you through the ad. And they're like, what ad?
What ad? Ken has gone rogue.
I literally had no idea what was going on. I had to like scroll way up in the Discord to figure it out. I was like, wait, what?
All right, so Star here Trek? We are. We're now buying ads. We are as official as it gets now, I guess, right?
Look, we were official when I paid like $25 to get an AI-generated logo made, okay?
Oh, that's true. That's true. Oh, don't tell anybody that. Now all the artists are going to hate us.
I mean, no, if you want us to like... I mean, if we've got paying for ads money, we might have paying an artist to redesign our logo for us money.
All right. Let's not push it. All right. Let's not push it.
Yeah. So welcome to another episode. You know, I like to give you a rundown at the top of the episode about what we're going to be doing. So we'll do a little intro. Got a little intro question after we've just talked a little bit about how we've been. And then we're going to do another rundown of the Board Game Geek Top 100. We're starting at... get ready, number 69.
Nice.
And we're going to work through as many as we can within the allotted time frame because we do not have a lot of experience with this set, which we say every time, but I think this time it's going to be
no,
true.
No, it's real. It's for real, right. Real this time, not for play.
All right. So
we made the decision since our ad read was done by people who had been drinking some champagne as they did their podcast that we were going to have some drinks ourselves today. So
got a little post grass cutting Coors Light,
and you know, we sound worse than normal and you hate this. I guess
blame alcohol like a lot of problems in America. Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. Especially, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think our alcohol consumption overall per capita is getting back up to like pre-prohibition numbers, which you know, after prohibition, it dropped in like half, and we've crept back up there, I think. So,
and wow. that's with weed being legal. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Now this is a history podcast.
Actually, sweet. Not legal here. I should say you can get about 20 different variations of it, just not the actual stuff.
All right. So before we. We've become too much of a political podcast. Let's do introductions. So I am your co-host.
Actually, though, I did look this up to verify because I thought it was the case. During Prohibition, weed actually was legal. It was actually made illegal initially in 1937.
Oh, I was going to say 1940. So
yeah. So actually, Tim, before Prohibition, when alcohol consumption was as high as it was today, we also had weed legalization. So, I mean, coincidence? I don't
know. Man, it all comes full circle, doesn't it?
Maybe they just go together.
Maybe.
Anyways,
sorry.
I'm Sarah.
Go ahead.
I'm Sarah. I'm one of your co-hosts. Say what's up.
Oh, yes. This is Ken, the guy who is a friend of DeSoto, does enjoy a Greatest Generation podcast, did buy an ad there, and I think some 40 people maybe listened to it because of that. So, if you're here because of that... welcome to our vastly inferior podcast.
Yeah, heidi ho, new listeners. I'm Tim. What's up? You probably know me at this point. See, I know none of you new listeners. None of you are heathens, okay? You've gone from episode one and you know, arisen up, all right?
No, you have to listen to the most recent. And then you're like, okay, it's worth it to go back and listen to the garbage dumpster fire that is the first episode of any podcast because you don't have your like sound right or anything. It's always
a
mess.
That's true. It's tough. I don't know if I can go back and listen to our first one just because our sound quality was rough in comparison. It wasn't terrible by any means, but I feel like so many people seem to have these very professional first casts, and I'm just like, who are you people? Like, have you done mini casts before?
I mean, are you talking about Dax Shepard? Like, who has a good first cast?
I mean, I guess, so I'm thinking about, like, for example, the It's Always Sunny podcast, like, it pretty much sounded good from day one. Now, obviously, it, like, evolved a lot. Sure, but, like, even still, I've also... I've gone through some other casts where they already have like sponsors and like they still like it sounds really good. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how to get into that podcast world.
You're not far deep down enough into the super niche, truly backyard kind of shit that I listen to.
Since this may be my one episode where I'm have an excuse to talk about my favorite podcast, Noah, the Greatest Generation guys just released a re-recording of their initial, they redid it as a live show because they felt like their audio quality was very bad. They start out as like professional video producers and editors, so. You know, they're like, oh yeah, we thought we would be able to do a great job producing stuff, and they thought their stuff was terrible. Compared to us, even now, way, way better. So, I mean...
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a pharmacist and a couple of tech bros. Yeah.
I literally, for our first episode, was like, hey, I should find an audio editing tool to download and start learning how to edit audio. And it took me a while. But anyway, yes, we should probably stop bashing our podcast and by implication, the people who are silly enough to listen to us. You guys are great. And
you guys have the best taste, honestly. Some of the best taste I've ever seen.
It's amazing how just clearly... I don't even know where I was going with that. Anyways, so... Ken, what's been going on in your world?
Yeah, I'm doing ton of stuff that's non-board gaming. So I'm continuing to do a lot of... a lot of Latin dance stuff, a lot of bachata, getting out and doing Rocky Horror Picture Shows, and going out dancing with other kinds of things and music stuff, and staying very, very busy. I think this last weekend I did like 9 different things over the course of the 3 days. I saw Josh Johnson's doing stand-up.
I don't know if we talked about it on the cast, but Ken is one of those people that, like, I'm pretty sure if he's allowed a moment to breathe, he's upset. Like this, you are always high octane, always doing something. I'm pretty sure that you're an impossible man to grab. You know, like
basically, I stop doing things when I am physically completely drained and unable to continue moving, or if I have some kind of a deep emotional or psychological thing I need to process. Other than that, I'm going.
Does it actively rejuvenate you, like going out and doing things?
Yeah, no, that's it. What I describe myself to people as being an extreme extrovert, that's exactly what I mean. Like being around people is always energizing. Even night after I'd gone and done some acro yoga, done dancing, been doing stuff nonstop from the time I got off of work on Friday until 8:30 p.m. Sunday. If I had friends that wanted to come over and sit on the couch and watch TV together, I'd have done that because like I no longer had enough energy to move, but I would still love being around people. So
I'm exhausted listening. Just so.
Like physical energy. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I talked to 4 people the entire weekend and was totally happy
more
with
than
that.
Me. And that was a good thing.
That's more than me.
And one of those people was Tim.
True. I got to have a nice drive out, help Sarah lift a rowing machine, so that was great.
Yeah, that's what's been going on in my world.
Where do you fall on this continuum, Tim, from Sarah to Ken, of 4 people over the weekend is good versus 9 different activities with 6
I mean, I always refer to myself as the introverted extrovert. I really like going out and doing things, but I can only do that so much, and it doesn't rejuvenate me. I definitely have to, like, refill that battery. So I can't go out and do things constantly. But obviously, I like to invite people over, host things. I like hosting. It's really enjoyable for me. But I'm also, like, at the end of the day, I'm ready for everybody to go home and also have time to myself. So, yeah, exactly. I don't know if there's a lot of people who... I feel like I'm kind of on the weird end of the spectrum there. I'm not really sure.
What I would say with that is that, I mean, when you look at like a Myers-Briggs extrovert, introverted, that's exactly what they're talking about. Like, does being around people, is it energizing or is it tiring? It doesn't mean you don't like it. I mean, you can like doing a lot of things that are tiring, but it's not energizing. Like when you need to recharge for the week, you need some time to yourself. And like I said, I definitely will make and choose to have time for myself if there's something I need to process. There's something that happens, something I'm thinking about, something I need to deal with. I'll say there, oh yeah, I'm going to schedule in 6 hours here on Saturday. I'll give me a couple hours to kind of deconstruct the walls I've built around this this emotionally sensitive topic, a couple hours to process things, a couple hours to build myself back into a state where it's safe for people to be around me, and then I'll go out and do something, you know. But, you know, I'll that is also something that I am very fortunate to be able to do, to be able to kind of schedule, okay, oh, there's a thing I need to deal with in my head. Let's put a time on the calendar and a date and a time and make that happen.
Man, you're a regimented man. Yeah. Respect.
Meanwhile, if something interrupts my like 4 hour veg on the couch on a Sunday morning, I'm worthless for that whole week. I need that 4 hours. I need to watch last week's Saturday Night Live and then something random on Netflix completely by myself, and I don't have to think about anybody else, and I can just veg and hang out with the dogs. That's like my element. And then eat lunch, and then I can do something in the afternoon. Usually go over to Tim's for board games. I do enjoy alone time.
I think that's totally makes total sense.
Until I have to move a rowing machine, in which case I have to call people.
That's right. So are you somebody, though, who, like, if I know sometimes it might take a little bit of coercion to get you to come out. Are you somebody who, like, despite that resistance, you're finally happy when you do kind of make that push to finally go out, or are you just somebody who's
basically is Tim being kind or unkind when he keeps encouraging you to come?
Yeah, get
join
the fuck
us
out and come play some fucking board games.
I honestly think it's like a social anxiety thing where you like dread it, and then you go and you're like, oh, this is fun. Awesome. I love this. These are cool people, and I like being around people. And then the next time it comes up, you're like,
I mean, I think that's pretty normal. Yeah, a lot of people are like that. Okay, so to bring this back around to board games, which it was related, but to really bring it back around, so does playing board games recharge you? I was kind of thinking about this the other day. Is it an activity that actually recharges your batteries? Like, if you played them all weekend, would you feel more rejuvenated, or would you feel drained and feel like you actually need a break even from that?
So with board games, I would say that depending on the heft of the game, it could definitely end up creating a mental strain and burn for me trying to keep track of everything, trying to plan everything, trying to remember everything. And so it's important for being able to do like board gaming all weekend, or when I've gone and done week-long trips out to the beach or the mountains with friends, and we'd play board games all week, to really make sure that I maintain a good mix of things that are relaxed and low mental burden versus things that are heavy. I think, things that require a lot of being able to read people and their emotions and their thoughts, social deduction kind of things. It's a different kind of a psychic stress. So I think there's definitely importance with me that it'd be the right distribution of games and the right complexity. But even if I'm learning constant new games, like learning new games, rules for games doesn't exhaust me. Like I'm fine learning 5 new games in a row.
Interesting.
And that can be fun and relaxed and fine. So learning the rules isn't the issue. It's the level of thought it takes for me to feel like I am playing the game properly.
I would say that learning new rules definitely tires me out quite a bit more than if I already know the game. And I even find, as big of a board gamer as I am, I definitely have a threshold of like, I can only do so many complex games back to back to back. I need a break in between to be able to fully enjoy the experience. And I notice this a lot, especially with we're about to do, a huge board game extravaganza with my dad in this upcoming weekend, because he's coming into town. He's a big board gamer, as you guys know, or if this is your first episode, my dad's a big board gamer. He has more games than me. And
he's been on an episode with us before.
And so
go listen to the entire run of the show so you can find that episode and find out
that's right
about Tim's dad.
But it's quite the onslaught, especially like if we, like my wife and I, when we go back home to my parents and we play games, it can be a lot, especially for Alicia to like just do, so many games back to back to back. And I can definitely do more than her, but there's a threshold where it starts kind of tipping from enjoyment to drain. And even for me, I can hit that threshold. So
it's like going to the beach where like the first hour or two that you're on the beach, like, yeah, it's nice, and you're like chilling, and you're like, yeah, this is what I needed, toes in the sand. And then you're out there for like 8 hours, and you're like, I just,
if I see a beach again, I'm gonna die.
You know, and if you're out on the beach every day for like a week, you're ready to kill your entire family. But if you're there for the weekend, maybe you guys have different beach trips.
I have friends that will, you know, love to, you know, they'll be at the beach and be spending huge amounts of time, you know, on the beach. And like you're saying, like, I feel very similar to that. After 3 or 4 hours, like, I need to go, you know, enjoy some air conditioning for an hour or two. Like, I can't keep doing this. Which I also do enjoy going out to Bear Island, which is a complete, like, primitive campsite kind of a thing. It's no air conditioning in sight. And so, you know, I enjoy doing that for a weekend, but it's definitely a endurance event at that point when I have no real ability to get away from the beach.
You know what? And I think this is, Tim, I think this is what you do really well with your board game nights, is like between games, if we're playing two games, we have like a little chat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important.
Like a little, we probably spend like 30 minutes to an hour between games, just like shooting the shit, eating snacks, doing not board game things. And that gives my brain like a time to be like, okay, well,
you,
calm
and you
down.
Can also better assess, like, what am I in the mood for? I'm not ready to jump right in to figure out what I'm in the mood for right after finishing a game. And I think maybe we might be outliers just being board game fanatics, but in general, I would say there's probably a lot more conversation that other people are having while they're playing their games, whereas we're pretty focused on the games now. Like, we chat with each other enough that we kind of mean a lot of business when we play, which, it, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You can obviously go one way or the other, but yeah, it's one of those things to where I think we spend a lot of time just focused on the game. So I like having a bigger break in between to where you can really truly veg out, because we're honestly, it's to the point of us trying to speed the game along, like always making sure that we're focused on the game and kind of make sure it gets done in a timely manner. So if people don't want to necessarily stick around, they can go and, you know, go do something else or whatever they want to do. So
that's something with something like Masquerade, where you know, very quickly end up losing track of who has what roles and who's what's going on. And it's very easy to play the game without really trying to keep track of everything and trying to track all the moves. I am definitely a player who will try to keep track of where everything went, where everything could go. Okay, this person traded with that person, who traded with that person, who traded with that person. So this is the possible set of permutations about who could have what cards at this point. And so me playing, you know, Masquerade, I will have a headache at the end of playing it three or four, you know, a couple times in a row, because I am trying to keep track of a lot of different things. I advise people when I'm teaching the game, don't try to keep track of everything. You're not going to be able to, and you're going to have more fun if you just kind of make a best guess as to where you think things are and what you think's going on. But that becomes an element for me where it's a difference between, you know, there are games that I can let go of just realize, like, there's not enough information for me to know, and I can just kind of let go and relax, versus the ones where, like, there's barely enough information here for me to try to track everything. That's actually why I enjoy playing Twilight Imperium with the Prophecy of Kings expansion, because base game alone, it's simple enough that I start feeling like I can track everything.
Sure.
And so I try to track everything. You add in Prophecy of Kings, there's not enough complexity that now my brain is like, too much, let go, just make the best guess you can.
With that, you have to be a little careful, because you're looking at two different angles of, like, Prophecy of Kings doesn't really add a huge layer of complexity as much as it really adds a larger layer of obfuscation slash, like, just there's a lot more variables at play. Not so much that it's more complicated. Exactly. I mean, obviously it is, because they are adding more mechanics. There's more things to keep up with. But in general, it's not like that much more complex.
It's not inherently more complex. It's just adding more things that I would have to keep track of if I really wanted to track everything that's happening. And since I, you know, by default, my brain tries to just try to keep track of everything, that adds enough in there that it stops trying to keep track of it all, which is helpful for me in being able to more just relax and play 12 hours of Twilight Imperium than, you know, if you're playing the base game, like, there, more and more start trying to track everything going on. That you're right. It's not complexity, just more things that I would have to track if I wanted to actually know everything going on.
I mean, that makes sense. Oh man, Sarah's having some technical difficulties over here, but I think she's back.
Oh, looks like we have her back. We've been continuing to carry the podcast, Sarah, without you. Had Tim not called it out, our listeners would not even know that you had connectivity issues. But now they know, and unless I edit all this out, it's on the record.
Man, he's holding you over a barrel, unless I edit it out. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, sorry. My computer died. I don't know how it became unplugged, but it has no battery life, so... And now it's not, like, working well.
So, with that in mind...
We actually had a planned question that we were going to talk about before we decided to start talking about whether board games are restful and what we do for rest and energy. Do we still want to cover that, or do we want to move on to our main topic and just skip it? Because we're already 22 minutes in, so...
No, we're doing it. We're talking about my question.
All right. You guys ready to really warm up now?
This was our who we are and what we've been doing this week section of the podcast. It took 22 minutes.
It will happen before, and it.
You're acting like this hasn't happened before. It definitely has. Okay, so the question this week for our warm up question is: have you seen the board game skit from
so
Saturday
the
Night
yes,
Live
because
this week.
You made us watch it right
and
before
what are
the
your
podcast
thoughts?
Started recording.
All right, look, we don't script much out,
it.
Okay? But once in a while, we at least come in with a plan, and that plan might be 5 minutes long, like this one. But nonetheless, there was a plan.
Ish. I think we were seconds before when I was like, "Hey, you should ask us about this on the podcast." But yeah, so for everybody who hasn't seen it yet, go ahead and pause us. Go search for SNL Jumanji skit. I think that would find it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just SNL Jumanji comes right up.
I don't think there's a lot of Jumanji skits on SNL, so I think this should be the main one that you find. If you find ones that are older than like recently, it's too old. It's not the right one. But yeah, so the whole skit was a person who is worried about playing board games because she's worried that she'll get sucked into the game.
And that person is Kristen Wiig. Comic
yes, that
genius.
Person is Kristen Wiig, and my immediate feeling on that and watching it was that she was naive in what her complaint was about playing the game, because the game they wanted to play was Ticket to Ride, which is a 5-player game, and she was the 6th person. At that point, just say, "Hey, there's 5 of you. It's a 5-player game. Why don't you play without me, and I'll just help out my boyfriend or whoever it was that she was there with." Easy, simple, and you don't have to worry about getting sucked into the game.
I wanted to
style.
Turn this into a quiz for our viewers to see, like, what was the first thing that popped out to them when they pulled out the Ticket to Ride game. I wanted to turn it into a quiz, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have. I'm sorry. Yeah, I mentioned the player limit before I mentioned the game here. But, yeah, no. It was Ticket to Ride, which, as every, properly educated board gamer among us knows, only allows 5 players in the base game, which is all they
my
have.
Chance to gatekeep? Ruined. But, ruined. No, I mean, it was sorry, honestly man. The first thing that sorry. Popped out yep. when they pulled it out. I was like, wait, isn't that a 5-player game?
I mean, here I am, just excited that a property that I watch consistently, maybe I'm like one of the only people that still watches SNL, let's be real, mentioned board games. And then you guys are like picking it apart.
Well, no. So... Yep, 5-player game. There's 6 people
Look,
there.
It,
yep.
We can't. I can't help that. Like, this is the way. This is the avenue that I view games from now. If we have a group together, yep. I'm like, how many people can I play this game with? It's like the first question that pops in my head.
My board games, Sarah, on my board game shelf are not organized based on type of game or theme or artwork. They're organized based on player count.
Okay, not all of us are monsters, okay?
Games,
I just want to make it clear.
3-player games, 4-player games, 5-6-player games on the bottom shelf. That is how I organize
you
my board
monster.
Game shelf. Because the thing that I care about most on trying to think about what the right game is what player counts is this game good at? So immediately, yeah, I'm thinking, Ticket to Ride, better with 4 players, can do 5.
Here's what I'm... The only correct
table.
Answer for board game shelf organization is alphabetical. Now, I say that with the caveat that mine is absolutely not alphabetical. I'm saying that because there is literally no other way to organize them. Like, I've tried to, like, create, like, categories.
Oh, no, there's all kinds of ways. You can organize them based on core mechanics, based on theme.
You're going to run into edge cases upon edge cases upon edge cases.
But that's terrible. The fun of organizing
that is the anger-inducing part of organizing board games.
My system is utilitarian.
Is there like a Dewey Decimal System?
Figuring out those edge cases, is this game about animals or is it about, you know, hunting? You know, like, I don't know. What are your themes are that you're putting together here, you know?
I don't care to talk about the number of hours I've stared at my shelf wondering how else it should be organized, okay? Like,
and yet you have not organized it alphabetically.
No, it's not alphabetical because it's the only correct answer, but it's the most useless answer. If that makes any sense.
No, because it makes it very easy for you to find the game. Because if you know the name of it, you can find it on the shelf.
Sure,
it's
but
a
if
very
you
useful
like
way to organize it.
So, the avenue that I think about this. So people come in, and I want to be able to like avert their eyes to or direct their eyes to a specific section of the shelf. Like, oh, you like playing with, you know, playing together instead of against each other. Well, here's the co-op uh-huh. corner. Okay, and there's all the cooperative games.
Yeah.
Right. Like the. And then the right. other one, and then up here, it's like, oh, this is the abyss corner where if you want to get really deep and involved in a game, you want to look in this corner where you just want to be swamped with mechanics and you want your brain to be set on fire. Look up here. That's how I mm-hmm. like to organize it. And obviously, as you start to do that, like you start to enter, you know, no clear delineation. Like some of them are like party games, but some of them are a little heavier than party games, but they're not really, really heavy games. And so figuring out, like, where to put games in a shelf is kind of challenging.
So where would you rate Jumanji, as a game? Where would that go on your shelf? The original Jumanji that has all kinds of nasty things come out of it.
Oh, that's a party game, definitely.
What party game?
Definitely a party game.
See, and honestly, I don't disagree because, I mean, my thought on it is that Jumanji is a game, it's basically Candyland. You don't even have to defeat the challenges. You just have to keep rolling the dice. And so, like, when I'm watching the original movie Jumanji, my feeling on it as a child was, why do they keep fighting the things? Just keep rolling the dice. And
so it's like Monopoly, where you just keep rolling until the game ends as quick as possible.
Yeah, exactly. It's all... You know, sure, you know, only four people can have figurines on the board that move, but everybody can enjoy the monsters that keep jumping out and eating, trying to kill people. Now, the problem with it being a party game is I think at the end of it, only the four people who played the game actually remember what happened because it resets to the original state. So it's a party game that could be fun for everybody, but in the end, only four people are going to remember the fun time that they had. But I also thought it was a great game to use if you wanted to, like, have extra time to study for a test, because as long as you can survive with the current challenges,
just bring your study material there, and you know, you basically enter, you know, a nebulous time zone where, you know, time has no relevance to anything,
right? Yeah. And as long as somebody survives the game to finish rolling it out, you know, I think everything resets. So I always really did wonder with Jumanji, and I don't feel like he ever gives a clear answer of what happens if all four players die. Does the world still reset? Does it reset without those four players? You know, do you just have a world that has all kinds of monsters running loose? Has that never happened before? Nobody really knows.
Yeah, you just created a dimensional tear. Like, I've seen the Marvel movies, you know, where it's all multiverse and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's something like that, right? We just create a dimensional tear. Universe collapses in on itself. Surely something like that.
So I don't know. Sarah, is this at all remotely the direction you were wanting the question to go in? Or have we hijacked your question again for nonsense?
You know, I was interested to see which direction it would go. One, showing you the video, and two, talking about it, which is why I did not allow any conversation outside of after we watched it before we started the podcast. So definitely very different direction from what I was expecting, but also I wasn't expecting you to call out that there were six people and it's a five-player game. So
see, now it's like at the end when the guy that jumps out of the game is like, oh, you can leave. I was like, of course you can leave, it's a five-player game, there's six people, somebody has to leave.
Do you know how much Do you know how hyped I would have been if that was the actual reason that he gave why she got to leave?
That would've so
it
awesome.
Would have been sick. I would have been like, all right, somebody's a board gamer there. All right. But I appreciate the Ticket to Ride shout out. You know, it could have been Catan. So, you know, I think Ticket to Ride's an upgrade.
I just love that one of the jokes in the sketch was that the guy who had the board game was like, I am the man of this house. And that's the joke, that the guy with the board game is the man of the house.
I mean, it's just like him is when he told
the right.
board game night.
No.
I don't know.
The long dick of the law is in this house.
So are we going to get started with our top 100 board game geek talk, top 100? Number 69. And we are talking about The Gallerist, which is from 2015. The tagline is, amass a fortune and stake your reputation by operating a lucrative art gallery. And the rating is a 7.6. Audience rating is an 8.
So, yeah, for me, this is definitely a want to play. I have it categorized that way in Board Game Geek. I have not played it, but it does seem very very exciting as a game that lets you... Set up a art gallery and make decisions about what goes on the walls and how to run it. So I've definitely heard a lot about the game, but watched a number of reviews and have yet to play it. Tim, Sarah, you guys also familiar or not with this game?
I'm not cultural enough to play this game. You know, art exhibits.
I have seen it at the board game store.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there a lot of...
It's got an Amazon price of $200, which is...
Whoa! Is it really... Is there a lot going on with it to justify $200?
It's got art, so that justifies it.
They could have just used AI. I mean, come on now.
Just like we did with our logo.
That's right. Oh, man.
We're not admitting to that.
There's so many artists right now who are just like... committing seppuku right now. They're just they're very sad right now. But yeah, sorry, I don't have really anything to add to this one.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a pretty complex game, a 4.25 out of 5 on BGG.
Holy moly, that is not something I would have expected out of an art game. What in the world? What is going on with this
game?
All right, I got to pull it up now. Well, see, Sarah was sharing, and then things got tumultuous as computer problems arose.
My computer problems, man.
Yeah.
They're just a continuous problem. I just need to get on the desktop that Morgan made me.
Yeah, you promote and nurture artists, buy, display, and sell their art, build and exert your international reputation. So, yeah, you're doing the whole economic thing there.
All right, well, so much for that one. I have nothing to contribute to it. All right.
Ooh. Fun. Number 68, we've got an IP. So Star Wars Imperial Assault from 2014. Play as a rebel or imperial forces to fulfill mission objectives.
We should definitely do an episode at some point about IP-based games.
That definitely.
Weird. I mean, I was thinking the same thing.
For a little peek behind the curtain here, Tim had suggested that earlier in the day, and I just... beat him to the gun on actually expressing it on air, so it's not my idea, not his.
But, that's podcast rules, man.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited to talk about it. Yeah, I wanted to make sure we did enough research on it to begin with, which it would actually be my first topic I actually have to do a significant amount of research on. But yeah, so stay tuned for that one because I definitely want to hit up that episode. It could be really cool.
And trying to prove that we don't have to do research, I made the comment about Dark Tower as an IP-based game, only to immediately be slapped down because it's not. So I was like, oh, yep, definitely a situation where maybe I need to do some more research.
But you know what? It's funny because we definitely gravitated toward it because Morgan and I are both fans of Stephen King's Dark Tower and thought that it was an IP game. And then the guy at Game Theory was like, actually, it's not related at all.
Interesting.
Whoops.
But we were already committed, so we bought it. And it was great.
But yeah, Imperial Assault is a, you know, it's again one of the kind of role-playing type games that Tim hates.
Whoa.
You... set up for you end up setting up adventures that are run by the players, and I think you have one player generally running the empire while the others are rebels, or yeah, I think that's the direction that works if I remember correctly.
Yeah, this it definitely looks like you've got a lot of figures like on a board with hexes on mm-hmm. it, and looks like there's like stormtroopers, for example. Yeah, so it looks like it's very RPG slash D&D esque, exactly. I guess.
So it's a lot of the combat and rules and those kind of things. So not the one that Tim has agreed to maybe someday play of Gloomhaven, but. Also not the one that he's requiring a certain number of listener votes to play, of like a full-on D&D or other role-playing game kind of thing, so.
Nah, all right, first of all,
by the way, we got those votes.
There's
we
no
got
way.
Those votes.
There's
you
no
are
way. I don't believe
contractually
it. I want
obligated.
Evidence right here, right now that actually happened. And while you're pulling up that evidence, I'm also going to add this. So there's, and it kind of relates to the IP stuff, but two IPs I just have absolutely negative interest in is Star Wars and Marvel. If I see one more fucking Marvel board game, I'm gonna poke my eyes out. I am so over this stupid IP and also the movies, all of it. I'm done. You know what? Endgame came out. It was great. I had a great time. If I don't want to see any more Marvel stuff. It is so overdone.
Well, and now we know that Tim has alienated.
You know what? If there's any audience left at the end of this, the smoldering ashes that is our audience at this point, you
Tim,
know what?
Tim I'm does impressed. Not speak for the official, is not the official not. Voice of the Board Game Triangle, and his views and opinions do not represent those of the Board Game Triangle.
Yeah, ink. Yeah.
There's no ink. No.
I mean, isn't this the riveting content they came here for?
So. Each of the hosts of this podcast don't believe in what each other are saying.
Are you not entertained?
I have not loved many of the Marvel board
I mean, there,
games I have played either.
There's so some that are really well reviewed.
It would take a lot for
yeah,
me to
I mean,
play
there are definitely some that are really well reviewed. I'm trying to remember one recently that came out that people had a lot of really rave reviews for it. Like, even people who are not huge Marvel fans. But to me, the IP just taints it. Not because like Marvel's bad. It's just that I'm so done with the theme. Same with like zombies or a Cthulhu theme. Like, people also have similar sentiments mm-hmm. there. We're just tired of seeing the same themes over and over again. It would be nice to do something fresh.
See, the sad part is here. I recently bought Star Wars Rebellion. I was thinking I could play that with Tim, and that could be fun. He might like it.
You can
it.
Shove that game up your ass. All right.
Dead of Winter. I also have Dead of Winter that I thought would be a fun game, something to bring to a table
Ken,
here. It's a zombie game.
Ken is
that
just full.
So all the games are going, oh, this would be a fun game to play with Tim. Oh, no. The other one is Cthulhu based. It's the two player. Blank out the name of it here.
Not Unfathomable, right?
Arkham Horror.
Arkham
Horror.
You know what?
I would.
Arkham Horror. I would. Arkham Horror has a lot more going on with it, though. It's not just like they're not just riding the dick of Cthulhu. Okay, like there's more things going on there. I would be down to try that out.
So of the three games that I was thinking, hey, maybe someday I'll get to
No, the rest of them you
Tim.
Could shove it. Absolutely.
Arkham Horror.
But that one yeah. I'd be down for.
No, I do think Dead of Winter is a fun zombie-based game that's definitely has a lot of complexity to it and a lot of fun decisions. And we'll talk more about Star Wars Rebellion later, since it's
it
further on this
is.
List,
yeah.
And I don't want to spoil my opinions on that. They're not negative.
There's not really any overlap between Imperial Assault and that game, right? They pretty much fundamentally play completely
no, not
different.
Really. They're completely fundamentally different games. Yeah. No, Imperial Assault, like I said, it's more the role-playing style, moving miniatures around on the map and fighting stuff kind of game.
I mean, it's rated pretty high, 797. It's got a pretty good following.
It's I mean,
been
it's,
around a bit.
It's the 68th best game of all time based on the absolute unquestionable judgment of the board game community.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to number 67, Paladins of the West Kingdom, 2019. Invaders are coming from everywhere. Keep the faith and defend your homeland.
Yeah, I've never All right. heard of this. 2019.
Are you serious? Really? You've never heard of it?
Yeah, no. I know nothing about this one.
Even so, yeah, this is part of the West Kingdom
okay.
trilogy.
I'm familiar with the West Kingdom trilogy. Okay, Oh, okay, that makes sense then. Yeah, no, then I...
Now, what I don't know off the top of my head, is this the most recent of the three? I'm pretty sure it is.
I am familiar with the West Kingdom series. This one I was not specifically familiar, but yeah, no, Potter's West Kingdom, okay, so yeah. Yeah, no, now I remember having heard things about this, so I will recant my complete lack of knowledge of this, and people who are coming to Stonemean can turn around and head home.
I'm actually looking up right now because I wasn't sure off the top of my head. I don't think it is the most recent. I think Viscounts of the West Kingdom is the latest of the trilogy. But yeah, these games have been around for a little bit. This one's 2019, and I honestly don't think you can go wrong with any of the three, and it's really just different flavors and varieties of like a lot of the similar mechanics packaged up. But they add some flair to each one, and they each play a little bit different. So
yeah, I haven't played any of them, but I have heard good things about them, and I will add this to my want to play list now, so that I don't forget in the future that this is a game I want to play.
Have you played any of the three?
I have not. No. Yeah,
I need to tell my dad to bring this one for you to try out. Not this one of the three, so you could get a feel for the game.
Yeah.
Because I think it's Architects of the West Kingdom,
yeah,
which is the one that I played, and it'll be enough that it gives you a flavor of what's going on
right
with these games. And to be honest, you can't go wrong with any of them. It's really just do your research and see which one maybe sounds like mechanically it appeals to you. They're all very well rated, as you can see, being on the top 100. You can't go wrong with any of them. So just, I don't really have much more to add other than just do research and see which one looks mechanically most interesting to you, because they're all
from
good
Board
games.
From Board Game Geek, they say that Architects is 97 and Paladins is 67. So clearly one is vastly better than the other. But
maybe so.
I have no idea.
I mean, I think maybe just based, it could be even recency bias, or it could be they learned some things from the previous one and implemented some things better. No idea. I haven't played this one.
Yep.
So
cool.
And they're not too bad to pick up. It's only $50. It's $50 on Amazon.
Are you familiar with Paladins of the West Kingdom or the West Kingdom trilogy, Sarah?
Y'all know I'm not. Y'all know I'm not.
Yeah. See,
I'm just gonna be quiet. I'm just gonna be quiet.
We kind of joke with this because the only bad part about this series is so far, Sarah probably has the least amount of experience overall with the series, but at this point, Sarah actually has a lot of experience in a few games that Ken and I have never even touched, and it's good to have her perspective there. But sometimes with these, like, Ken and I are just going to have a larger knowledge base on it.
We follow and track and experiment with a lot more games. Like I mentioned earlier, like I have...
We've been in the scene longer. That's really it.
I mean, in the scene longer, but also like I am always willing to try a new game. I'm always willing to go read rules for a game I haven't even played. I will go watch Let's Plays and reviews of games that I may never own. So I definitely expose myself to a lot.
Meanwhile, if you ask me the rules to a game that I played like basically every other weekend for the entirety of my college career, I could tell you there are three rings and you can play a minstrel.
I mean, that's fine. Some people just do not have a proclivity to rules. Man, that's a hard one to say. See, the drink is finally kicked in now.
Yep.
So now I think we're at the what's the name of your friend's podcast?
The Greatest Generation was the podcast.
We are now at Greatest Generation levels, I think.
No.
I think they had quite a bit more drink by the time they did our
maybe
our bit, but yep.
I mean, my drink's pretty strong, so...
Okay.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. Sarah, take us away, or engage. There we go, engage.
Number 66, and I can tell from the tiny little snippet of the picture on this Board Game Geek Top 100 that this is a Uwig Rosenberg.
Yeah, yeah, you're picking it up. Very good,
yep.
Very good.
It's called Le Havre, mm-hmm, if that's how you say it. 2008, established a supply chain by collecting resources, building industries, and shipping.
I would say that I think for you of your Rosenberg games, it has many fewer animal minis, and therefore probably not the one you're going to want to play of them.
Let's just move on. We don't even need to talk about
it. Oh, man. All right. Well, Sarah, bring us some statistics. What do we got here? And why is this game $200? What the fuck?
I have no idea. Okay, so it's a 7.6, and then I think the audience rating is a 7.8. So it's not even that great. And, like, the numbers, the number of votes is 31,000. Like, that's not crazy. I have no idea.
I know that, so Tom Vassell has a lot of good things to say about this game. Mm-hmm. That I do know. But overall, it does seem to be one of his lesser popular ones overall, or at least right. There's not a lot of recent rumblings about it. You're going to hear a lot more about, like, Feast for Odin,
right?
Or Caverna, for example, when it comes to Uwe Rosenberg. So it's not to say, obviously, it's in the top 100, so it's doing fine. But there are other games that you'll definitely hear a lot more about when it comes to Uwe Rosenberg.
That's largely my full knowledge on it as well, that it's, you know, yeah, Tom Vassell loves this game. I've never really had a clear understanding of exactly why compared to other
Have you played
Rosenberg
it, Ken?
Games. But, I mean, all Uwe Rosenberg stuff is great, so I would expect it to be bad.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Have you played this one?
I have not, no. No. Mm.
There's no tiny little animals. Why would you?
It fails the cuteness factor. Get it out of my sight.
Yeah.
Well, again, you really can't go wrong with Uwe Rosenberg. It's another one. It kind of fits into the West Kingdom trilogy, to just look up the games and see what mechanics really speak out to you from that designer. And I don't think you can really do wrong from any of their games.
Yep.
They're popular for a reason.
Yep.
And you will definitely, once you've played one Uwe Rosenberg game, you're gonna definitely catch the feel in any of his games. I would say he does a good job of adding differences to the games. It's just, it's really hard to justify getting newer ones sometimes, because there is a bit of overlap.
That's very much where, like, the one that I would want to own of his is Caverna, because I love the complexity level. I love the, you know, the minis and the flavor. Mm-hmm. Agricola is a lot of fun to play, but, you know.
Dude, the Agricola two-player is really good.
Can I justify owning both Agricola and Caverna? I don't know that I can. So, I mean,
it makes sense.
Currently, I don't know that I own any of his games, so I really ought to get one at some point. But, you know, the one I want to get.
Which one do you want most after playing? I imagine you've played several at this point. I imagine you played Feast for Odin.
Yep.
Have you played that one?
Feast for Odin is a lot of fun, too. I really, like I said, the only thing that's actually held me back from buying Caverna is how often I think I can get to a table, because it is heavy enough.
Caverna is pretty hulking. I remember when we played it; it was pretty involved.
And so, like, I would say, like, I really enjoy Feast for Odin. If I think I can get that to a table more often, I'd probably get that over. You know,
I think Caverna is more involved than Feast for Odin.
No, that's to say, Caverna is way more involved. That's what I say. That's why I would not want to get the thing that's holding me back from getting Caverna is wondering if I can actually get it to a table. And so, if I can get Feast for Odin to a table more often than Caverna, then yeah, I'd get Feast for Odin just because I get to a table. But, like, my choice would be Caverna, because I love Caverna.
Yeah, I mean, I thematically, I thought Caverna was really cool, and I definitely enjoyed playing it. But I wonder if I was given that time slot, I would probably pick a different game, to be honest. Like, if I was going to pick a game that used that same amount of time, I would probably pick something else.
Wait, but we're not talking about Caverna. We're talking about Le Havre.
Right. Especially
all right, fine.
Caverna is at 46 here, so we will be talking about it later. So we'll
yeah, oh, stop oh, talking
oh,
about
oh,
it.
Let's not spoil our content here, guys.
Oh, Le Havre, best game ever, all right? The best,
best
Uwe Rosenberg game right now. Until we get to a better one.
But yeah, there are other ones on this
list.
All
right,
great,
so.
Anyway.
Sarah, take us away.
On this list higher, so yeah, we'll save all our detailed thoughts that we have not actually shared with you. We've just given you teasers. Yeah.
Oh, just teasers.
Okay, all right.
The mightiest.
Well, let's talk about number 65, Clans of Caledonia. And it's a Scottish name, so I'm pretty sure I didn't say it right. This is from
That's how I've heard it said, so you're on par as far as I can tell.
There you go. So the tagline here is, lead your unique Scottish clan to economic might via production, trade, and export. Lots of trade in this set.
I mean, isn't life all but trading? You're trading money for goods, you know? It's just life.
Tim, that's a depressing thought.
Oh, people come here to be entertained, not to be depressed and think about life.
Look,
my bad.
I'm two beers in. You can't be hitting me with this.
Definitely has cool little wood cutout pieces and things, and looks.
I hear pretty. This game mentioned a lot. Honestly just don't know anything about it, but I do hear the name come up quite a bit.
Yeah,
I wish I could add more substance to it.
I mean, if we were going to do research before we started doing doing an episode. That would
Let's cut it. Let's just go to number 64.
Hold on. What I do want to add here is look at the box art. It looks so much like an Uwe Rosenberg game, doesn't it?
It does. Yep. It does.
I wonder if there's like an artist that like does his stuff that also did the art for this, but it totally reminds me of that. Yep. But I don't know. Don't really have any other substance to add to it. Sorry, guys. But wait.
So number 64.
Yeah. All right, fine.
Grand Austria. Look, okay, I've played number 63, so I'm trying to get through these other
ones. Fair enough. All right, we're mushing along. Got it.
Number 64, Grand Austria Hotel 2015. Serve guests and prepare rooms to be the best hotelier in the Viennese modern age.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have any familiarity with this one.
I feel like somebody from the Dice Tower reviewed this recently and said good, not recently, but talked about it recently and had a lot of good things to say about it. But yeah, another one I'm not really super familiar with. I'm just looking at the art for it. Looks fine.
Not gonna lie, it sounds right up my alley, theme wise. Really?
Yeah,
I would love that.
Being a hotelier, serving guests and preparing rooms, it's your kind of a theme.
Yes,
I think your life, Sarah, would be if you didn't have to see a single hotel guest ever, your life would be complete.
You're not wrong. I like thinking about interacting with people, not actually interacting with people. All right. We ready for 63?
Sure, let's do 63.
We are ready for 63 because, did we at least mention the rating? And like,
no.
We at least got to be consistent here. Let's at least go through the basics.
They're all basically the same.
Okay, everything in this section is 7.6.
Yeah. There you go.
Variations on 7.6.
But what about the user reviews?
User reviews 7.9. It didn't hit 8. We don't care about it.
Jesus Christ.
We don't know the game. We
number
don't like
63.
The game.
Hold on.
All
right.
Come on, Tim.
This is it. All right, Ken. This is
it's Quacks.
You and I. Yeah, you and I, Ken. We're not going to talk at all during this one. Sarah gets this one.
Yep.
All right.
Let's hear about Quacks, Sarah.
Okay. We'll see if my internet can hold out long enough for me to talk about this.
Yeah, your internet is shit in the bed, I must say.
Because my computer died and I had to join this later, I think it's just messed it up. Anyways, Quacks of Quedlinburg, 2018, tagline, pull ingredients from your stock to make your pot bubble, but hopefully not explode. This game is the most tactilely satisfying game I think I've ever played. Because you put chips in a bag, and you swish the bag around, and you pick chips out, and you're making a potion. And it's fantastic. It is the perfect game.
Sarah, I love how perfectly you described it, especially the only half of it that I heard just because you cut out in the middle. But the way that you like came back, it was like there was so much joy in your voice. I just couldn't help but want to buy this game again. And I already own it.
I do not own it. And I feel
fantastic.
Like I should go buy it right now. Is the game store open right now? Maybe I need to go get this. This sounds like a great game, Sarah.
I mean, so joking aside, this is a fairly recent one, and it is a bag builder, and this one is so good at getting newbies into board gaming.
Yep.
There's nothing more fun than pulling these little like chinking chips out of a bag, and just it's so harmlessly fun. And also, there's very minimal penalty to going over. So it has all the fun parts of gambling without it being uber punishing. And so this is a really, really good one. If you're looking to add, like, you're just starting a collection and you really want to figure out what games to add, 110% add Quacks of Quedlinburg to your pool of games.
It's relatively simple
to
teach.
Really good.
It's not super. I mean, I think the complexity of this is a 1.95 out of 5 on Board Game Geek. So, very very straightforward game to understand how to play it. I would say that, despite that low complexity, It gives you enough of a feeling of control of what's going on with your game and ability to be making good decisions. You don't feel like you're playing a game that's just complete randomness. You definitely feel with the game that when you push too hard and blow up your potion, it's because you got greedy and you had stuff going on that you could have kept track of if you'd wanted to. But it felt really, really good to just try it for one more thing.
And yep, absolutely. When
it does, you know what? This is a perfect game two. Mm-hmm. Game night, game two, perfect because it's low complexity. Your brain's already fried from the first game. You don't have to think about it. You're just clicking your little chips around. It's perfect.
Or if like me, you actually are keeping track of it, it's relatively straightforward to keep track of how many bad things you have in your bag. And so if I am tracking everything and I am calculating the odds, it still doesn't give me a headache because it's relatively straightforward. And I still make, you know, will still put my hand back in the bag when I know that I shouldn't. Because like, well, if I really, it's not like you were saying, it's not that bad if I blow up. And it could be really, really good if I get the thing I need.
Yep.
And yes, I'm dealing with a 1 in 3 chance at this point of getting a bad thing. But if I get the good thing, it could be really good.
And you can pick up the game really cheap. And I'd have to say, as somebody who has a hard time playing simple games sometimes, this game I'm willing to play pretty much every time.
Yep.
It's always a lot of fun. So yeah, Quedlinburg. It already has 50,000 reviews, basically, and it's only been out for a few years. It's a good one to pick up.
So that leads us to 62, Obsession, 2018. Renovate an estate, manage servants, and pursue romance in Victorian England.
All right. Am I having deja vu here?
No, we've seen this one before.
Okay, so that means it's moved up the list.
It has moved up the list.
Which does not surprise me. Look at the rating, 8.16. Like, I mean, this one's shoot.
Yeah, something's got to have happened.
It's shooting up. I'm not surprised. Wow. I mean, the people who do get this game, I think it's probably just hard to get right now. Like, if you look, it doesn't even list a price right now. It's just a really hard one to get at the moment.
Oh, wait, really? Because they have this at Game Theory. Because I remember us talking about it, and then Morgan and I went to Game Theory, and they had it.
Really? Oh, Sarah, you got to pick it up and pick it up for us, for the group. It sounds really cool. I've heard a lot of amazing things about it.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Okay, so since we've already covered it, though, we are going to just go ahead and move on to the next one, because we definitely covered it
before. All right, so 61, Cthulhu, Death May Die, 2019, Disrupt the Ritual and Slay the...
Oh, wait, and this one we've covered as well. I feel like I'm crazy.
Slay the Elder Gods in this co-op dice chucker.
We have...
Ew, I don't like the use of the word chucker.
Chucker?
In that description. You gross.
Filthy chucker.
Chucker.
All right. Am I crazy, but did we also cover this one,
We've covered a Cthulhu game, but I don't think this one, because I would remember saying the word chucker.
This is what happens when we have a big gap in our top 100 covering, is they move around. So, but yeah, Cthulhu, Death May Die.
Nope, not this one, because I would have remembered chucker.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but this is another very, very highly rated one. There's not a huge amount of reviews for it. Overall, like it's only, you know, 10, 11, 12,000. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have a lot of really good things to say about it, about just if you want to just slay giant monsters. And I guess the quote, the term for this is, quote, Ameritrash, where you're just basically chucking dice. Is that okay, Sarah? Saying chucking?
No. Not at all.
It's actually even funnier because her mic dies or her sound is dying out for us. So I just hear, no, it just, she's gone. yeah, you're having struggles today.
But okay. I mean, we already know that Tim hates Cthulhu and everything about Cthulhu.
No, this is probably a trash game. Who would ever want it? Cthulhu theme. People love painting the minis for this, apparently. A lot of minis for this.
I should correct myself. I said all of these were a 7.6. This is where we get into 7.7 territory.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a whole lot more to add on this one just because I haven't played it. Yep. Don't really know a lot about it. So, sorry, guys.
Yep. This has been a bunch of games we don't know anything about, and we can't be bothered to do any research for you to tell you about. So, You know?
That's right.
Wait. But we have one more. One more, right?
Yep, we do.
We have one more, and we've played this one.
We have. It's one of the earlier games I actually have played of my more modern, fancy board game kind of things. I played this one. Haven't played this one in a lot of years, but I have indeed played it.
All right, what do we got?
All right, so it's number 60, Power Grid, from 2004. Bid, network, and manage resources in a race to supply the most cities with power.
So I haven't played it recently, but this is definitely one of the games that definitely edged me more into board games, for sure.
Same.
The auction system is fantastic. Yep. I'm actually surprised that, I guess a 7.7 is pretty respectable and 7.8 user score. 64,000 reviews. What I cannot believe, I did not know this game was from 2004.
Yeah, this is old.
It still holds up.
Yep.
That's crazy. Like, to put it into perspective, I don't think almost any game or almost every game that is on the top 100 is probably 2010 or later. If anything, maybe even 2015 and later. The fact that
I think we had one 2007 because I was like, oh, that's the year I graduated from high school.
Puerto Rico is higher on the list as 2002, also a great game. So that one's less than this, but yeah, we haven't gotten that.
Yeah, there's absolutely going to be outliers to what I'm saying, but my point is that there are not many old games on this list, and
Twilight,
I would quantify
Twilight
this as old.
2005, so I mean, but this is through the ages 2006, like, but there are not many games that are this old that are on this list. Like, this is we're definitely on the older edge of games on here.
And it's still being printed, and it's easy to get, and it's a really, really good game. I can't recommend it enough. I don't know enough about many other games that do an auctioning system, but I do really enjoy the auctioning system that is in this game. Yeah, so you're basically just auctioning for or it's a system for just buying different power plants. They produce different types of energy, and depending on what's bought, it affects like the market for how much those different energy types sell for, and it really creates just an interesting dynamic, and everybody's like setting up different power systems across the U.S. It's thematically maybe a little dry, but mechanically it's a lot of fun.
This game is one of my 9 out of 10 games. I don't have very many 10 out of 10, don't have a lot of 9 out of 10. Definitely one of my favorite games. The big caveat I would make about it is exactly that the theme is dry enough that getting it to a table is challenging. And so even though it's one of the early games that I played and I loved it, got me into gaming in a lot of ways, I don't own it because I don't have confidence I can get to a table. Just to comment about how hard it is to get to a table, Tim borrowed a copy of Power Grid, two, three months ago?
Yeah.
Two or three months ago, he borrowed a copy of Power Grid saying, hey.
Oh, no, it's more than two or 3 months ago.
I was going to say, it was like a year.
It's 6 months.
6 months ago, borrowed a copy saying, hey, this is a game we've loved and wanted to play, want to get to a table. We have still not played Power Grid. When Tim says he hasn't played it recently, he doesn't mean 6 months ago. He means years.
Yeah. And it's not from even a lack of enjoying it. It's there's a few other things at play there, such as just wanting to get newer games that I've bought to the table just to get a feel for them. But I know that if someone else wanted to play Power Grid, I would definitely be willing to pull it out.
100%. I would like to play Power Grid, but I think it's best with four or five players. So I would if we can get a couple more people who want to play it, let's play Power Grid. At this point, I want to make sure that I still like it as much as I thought I did, because I said it's been a lot of years. I've got rated on it's a 9 out of 10. Maybe it deserves a 10 out of 10. I don't know. Like, it's been a long time, so.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how well it holds up after, like, the amount of board games I've played now in between is quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm personally curious to see how well it holds up, because I had nothing but incredible praise for it when I played it before.
But again, what's really interesting with it is that because you have to bid for the power plants you're using, as they come out, you have to bid on them. You end up spending a lot of money on these power plants that early on, you're like, oh, this is going to be a really critical thing for me being able to generate power. And but you spent a lot of money on this, you could spend a lot of money on this lower end power plant, and then more better power plants come out. And do you now have the money to be able to buy that because you've made more money by selling the one you bought and have now generate enough power to be able to to spend more on? Did you just spend mm-hmm. too much money on an older power plant and now you don't have enough money to get something that's better? It really puts you in a position there of trying to, because it's not like you're just, you know, oh, how much should is it worth to spend on this plant? How much is it worth to deny this plant to my competitors? How much is it mm-hmm. worth to, you know, have this opportunity, you know, how much money can I make with this in the meantime? And, you know, what does this make sense in terms of overall game state to do? And it really gives you hard decisions on that you end up then sometimes not making a good decision because you're bidding and you're like, well, I don't want to lose this bidding war against my competitor now. And then you're sitting there going, I overpaid for that. I should not have done that. That was not a good idea.
I mean, I love that dynamic. That dynamic is really cool. But I think bidding mechanics in general are really fun. So.
Yep.
Nice. So that is the end of our list.
We did it.
And the end of the episode. Except for a little wrap up.
Yep. We were definitely a little worried because we knew there weren't a lot of these that we'd play that we wouldn't make it to a reasonable recording time. But I think, you know, all that extra talk in the beginning about, you know, random nonsense. Is
random nonsense.
Padded our recording hours here, our hour here. So sorry if you feel like this is a pretty fluff episode. We'll try to have a worthwhile theme or topic for the next one, I guess. But...
Look, even the best anime have fillers, okay?
That's true. Have you seen Dragon Ball Z? It's like, we have to come to terms that it's like 80% filler.
You really think Dragon Ball Z is one of the best?
How long are we going to be on the snake road?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Is he going to hit Super Saiyan, like, you know, in weeks? Can we get there? Do you know why that was the case in the animated series?
I do.
It was because the animated series was not actually done yet. And so they were actually buying time for the animated series to be done.
The comic on which it was based, the manga on which it was based.
Or sorry, the manga.
The manga on which it was based.
Manga. Manga. Isn't it manga?
I think manga.
Yeah.
It was not yet. Yeah, it was not complete. I think similar kind of thing with, I just started watching One Piece after watching the live action version on Netflix. And
The live action was so good.
Live action was good. I'm just passing 100 episodes into the anime and, There's so much slow storytelling in that we're like, yep, it's another episode of this fight. Cool. Another episode of that fight. Can we finish this fight? Move on to the next story point? No? No?
Oh, by the way.
This stuff too. Like, I am 100 episodes in for a reason. But anyway, by the way, Sarah, what was that?
I mean, by the way, there's this show on Netflix called Delicious in Dungeon.
Yes, so amazing.
And it's the best. So amazing. It's the best.
Yes.
Oh my god!
I haven't heard of this one.
I'm dying.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a D&D kind of, like, they go into a dungeon, but the whole thing is like they eat the monsters that they kill. So it's just fantastic, and the theme song is just a bop. It's so good.
So, again, in pitching it to, and the blurb is you know, just completely undersells it. It's like, oh yeah, they go and they cook up monsters. This is a group that goes in without provisions because they lack the money to buy provisions. They're trying to go in to rescue one of the character's sisters. And so they go in thinking, oh, well, hey, like, there's things down there. Surely we can figure out a way to cook and eat them in a good way. They end up, you know, making a friend who's like, oh, yeah, no, like, you can do all this fancy stuff with them and make them delicious. And so it's, like, every episode, it's, you know, they're figuring out how to you know, survive the episode, and then when they get to the end, they're figuring, oh, and now what creative, fun, interesting way can we find to cook the thing that we killed here? And it's just like, yeah, no, it's really it's exactly the cooking
it's
show.
It's so delightful.
I never knew I always wanted. Like, it is, yeah, it's so delightful.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess I gotta re-sign up for Netflix because I'm honestly waiting for Arcane season 2 to come out. So. That's when I'm going to subscribe again.
Yeah, I mean, it's still coming out. You know, at this point, you know, you can wait until it's all available and then watch all at once. But, yeah, it's new episode came out Friday and just watched that yesterday. Had a real good time with it. And, yeah.
We're at, like, episode 14 of 24. Yep. They've said that they're going to put out 24.
Mm.
So, it is so good, though.
It is so insanely good. Yeah. Oh, I'm delighted to hear you mentioning it, Sarah. you know, for the listeners at home, we had no awareness that the other had even heard of the show prior to Sarah mentioning it here, and it is absolutely
because
incredible.
Again, we don't script anything out. We're just other than episode general gist. That's
again,
all we got.
We barely talk to each other outside of this show, so you know that this is
wait.
Sarah likes to only talk
Who's
to four
voice?
People a weekend. So
yeah. we're not included in that.
I mean, apparently
it's
you
pretty
were,
hard to get on my calendar.
True.
Tim was good at carrying a rower up the stairs at my house.
And therefore got to squeeze in a normally unscheduled conversation with Sarah, you know.
I admit it was brief.
And that was my those four people were you, Rick, and the two people we bought the rower from.
True.
And now
I went to the grocery store, self-checkout, no talking.
Now all the listeners at home as well. So, you know, here you go, people. Like you think that, you know, no, you're among the elite that get to talk to hear about Sarah and her weekend. So, yep.
You know what's funny about self-checkout and people like Sarah are going to have a heart attack now. Places like Walmart are charging you to use self-checkout now. You got to be a...
Oh, I'll pay for that all day, every day. Yeah.
You know what's crazy, though, is we started out like, what? They're going to make me check out my own groceries? Are they going to pay me? And now we're just like, oh, no. Yes, sir. I'll pay for the privilege if I don't have to talk to another soul.
No. Yeah, no, I'm still in there with being annoyed at how obnoxiously hard they make the machines to work. You know, the fact that they're always sitting there and, you know, you didn't put the item in the bagging area. I'm like, you know, you don't.
You know what's funny? You know that this is all a byproduct of, like, basically theft. And they're just like, oh, well, now there's too much theft. And it's like, what did you think was going to happen? We told you that 15 years ago.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
you
and all this again,
fucking
like,
geniuses.
Traditional shopping experience, you walk up to the counter and you tell the guy what you want, and he goes around and he does the shopping for you and brings you your bag and checks you out at the thing. And then they started making people walk around the
mortified.
Store by themselves.
I would be mortified.
Stuff. And people were like, oh, are you going to pay me to walk around the store and do my own collection? And you know, people, you know, we let them get away with that. And now they're going to make us, you know, check ourselves out. And, you know, I don't know.
It's very weird.
They're going to require you to go to the back, and you're going to have to unbox it from the pallet on your own, and put it on the shelf, and then take.
That's warehouse clubs. That's Costco.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, these Costco.
Okay,
moves,
now we're a grocery store podcast.
Grocery store podcast.
We have all kinds of cool spinoffs for people who wanna you know fund us. You know, go. Go create a Patreon for us and point it at us because that sounds like too much work for us to.
We are the Publix Partiers Podcast. Find out about the latest groceries. Sale. BOGO is everywhere today.
Okay.
I think that just about does it for us.
Pay
we have
us, Publix.
We have one really big board game weekend with Tim's dad planned up ahead, and I'm sure we'll talk about that on the next cast, but that's it.
Just trying to figure out where I fit that in among laser tag and, you know.
Yeah,
Tim was asking me at the beginning, before we started recording, which games do you think you're going to come for, Ken? I'm like, I don't know, because it's not really about the games that I want to play, because he laid out a whole schedule of which games at what times, and like, yeah, my conflicts are more, I might be doing laser tag at 2, and I might go to a concert at 8, and I don't know, Tim.
My name's Ken. I'm trying to decide how many fucks to give about you, Tim, and currently it's 0. But
no.
I might be able to bump it to 1 or 2.
No, I feel like it's at least 2, maybe 3. You know, I just sit there, you know, compared to the 4 and 5 fuck things, you know, it's just, you know.
All right, you've only got a pocket full of fucks to give. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see where the night brings us.
Okay. So, yeah, if we still have any listeners, definitely thanks for sticking with us. Sorry for everybody who came here from a better podcast, expecting higher quality recordings. You know,
isn't that just true no matter what podcast they came from?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't even specify here because like anybody who came from any better podcast is like, oh, this looks like that could be a well-developed, well-produced quality thing. sorry, we're not. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, see, meanwhile, we're here. We can't even keep Sarah connected. Like, everything's falling apart. So on, I guess on behalf of Sarah, we'll say toodaloo, I suppose.
Yep, yep. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. My name's Sarah.